And welcome, 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 dear listeners, wherever you find yourself. This is your Business and Economic Zone here on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM. And I welcome you guys to a very odd Monday. Is it evening? Can we call it evening? But it's dusk. The reason being is it is cold. It is actually cold. Yes, guys, mid-September and we're experiencing cold temperatures again. Hopefully it's just this week, but as things go, it just might change, it just might not. But this is exactly the kind of climatic discussion where I left off on Friday night, that we're going to follow in earnest heading into the rest of this evening. Actually, for the rest of this week. I stress this because we have to get into the discussion at hand with regards to climate and how climate works. But before that, we're going to come right back after this short break and then continue with the program.
Mona asset tracking otuna omaya kulodhingi mokutura mo u tracking device mi endisa omarudhagahe gamena okadanki bots wanako eko ongangara otatu kupe uyerere keneto vuru okurandura oshendito shoe okuza mo mtumba sigo mpoka shiri pethimbo jomo njira torongi ithashi kiongothio eyo peke ana farama ana ngeshefa oshowo ana magumbo endereni pamwe nethimbo mokutonatira omaliko goe okuza kongothio peke Mona asset tracking oteku tuliremo uthano wo 4G wopo nje uthano mboka kaunonjironde ohaurongo koonkondo detango haurongo ethimbo kehe nomonkalombe po kehe kohambo nokofaalama kwaningi kopepi otatu adhika pomatungilo gomalaiti gatalelathana nombilwa yondangwa Eben Constituency kuyerere dhengela nena ko 081 2736 2622 Mona asset tracking. If it moves, we can track it.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of reward.
Now, coming back from that quick break, and just in terms of, firstly, apologies, guys. It's just a slight, quick correction there. However, where we ended off, where we left off on Friday night's discussion is the exact reason why we find ourselves here on this Monday evening, mid-September, on the Business and Economic Zone, why we're touching on the climate. And you'll be asking me, Dwight, where are you coming with this? It is exactly the reason why we're talking about the climate today, why we're going to be talking about the climate for the week. While it's actually going to be a synergistic or, one package discussion going to flow through the rest of the week, but it's going to be about the climate, the global economy, and the environment. Now, the climate impacts the environment. The natural environment is where we have other or interact as humans the most with regards to, and if you take Namibia, agriculture, mining, fishing. In those three spheres of our economy, mining, agriculture, fishing. Now, mining not so much. The only thing that could potentially hamper mining operations is the supply of water. If there are droughts, if there are floods, if there are, extreme weather patterns that influence production levels, that's the only concept that can impact mining activity. However, agriculture is a bit more fragile. Agriculture is so fragile, it's like handling a newborn baby. You know how we men are kept away from holding on to a newborn baby when the child was just born? except if you're now the father, obviously. But anyone else, it's a no-go zone. No-go zone. From there on, you've got the midwives and everyone else playing their role in between. Now, agriculture is in the same predicament because even though the discussion that I had in, I think it's last month. Yeah, it is in October. Yeah, it was in August. With regards to developing resilient agricultural practices, that discussion was based upon the one speech coming from, I think it was from the Agribank CEO, noting about trying to have production all year round so that agricultural production is not just dependent upon rainy seasons or rainfall patterns, or we are just limited to these amounts of months that wherein our rainfall needs to come from. But in order to try and make it all year round production, but that would mean developments or investments in said spheres or facilitating components of the agricultural economy that helps the agricultural economy to work all year round. But here's the thing. If we are still trying to understand where, what, how Namibia's climate is going to be over the next 10 years from today, from this September, from this week, heading into the next 10 years, the question about the global climate discussion becomes ever more important. Just two more things that I'm going to repeat once again throughout the course of this week. This coming September is going to be the United Nations General Assembly, meaning after our president is done, as our president Nagagangop is done there in England, with saying these farewells, or you know, I don't know what two heads of what a head of state does, you know, in terms of saying my deepest condolences there with Queen Elizabeth. From there, he's gonna have to go to New York later this month. And later this month, it's only this week and next week that's left. Because in October, next month, is going to be COP27. Yeah, COP27. The United Nations Climate Change Global Discussion. Guess where it's going to be held? In Egypt. Then he's going to be there again. He's going to be there again. So, the climate discussion is ever more so important this year than it was last year. Last year, everyone was still wondering about Delta. You remember COVID? You remember the COVID? That thing known as COVID? Yeah. The concern now is humanity survival under the new global climate and environmental challenges that we find ourselves in. In between there is also an energy discussion. Because it's key to note, guys, the biggest bad guy that has been identified around the world by everyone except governments and except the industry that depends on these energy sources are, you guessed it, fossil fuels. Fossil fuels. Fossil fuels are going to be the agenda. And I'm really sorry, guys. I am really sorry. If you as a Namibian, if you're going to sit here straight face, not even I can do that job. Not even I can lie that dangerous. Over the next 10 years, guys, we will not be able to make use of the oil finds, the oil discoveries there off the southern coast of Namibia. We won't be able to make use of that oil. We won't be. In the next 10 years, who says there will still be any fossil fuel powered cars left in the world? Petrol stations on top of that. I know. But look how quickly it got us in terms of getting AI and Internet of Things, as well as also smartphones into your hands. It took less than 5 years to get into smartphone territory that then allowed the self-driving component or self-driving explorations and researches to take place in what we now know as autopilot in some cars or even in aircraft.
Kukuruka na yowamba, kukuningsa ozere, nukse spika na mpito domgara mokagura mkisigemeke, ramangako uwera o HIV. Ayo kupoperan, tani kuiruka na maokoko. Tokoras gara, ninka wakuruka na yowamba. Mokutura mwe hundiro liye yowamba zuma okoko, ndi mwagwana kuma pukuru gomanzi. Tumako WhatsApp kono morozo ya utantandatu zime, tatwe utantane, mbali ntambali, mbali ntane. Ndidingura kwa Facebook, kwa VMMC Namibia.
Now I come back from that quick break and the key thing here is, what we need to take away guys, is that feeling happy about oil, unfortunately, there is no light at the end of the tunnel. In terms of economic prosperity or any kind of scenario about it. I stress this because who are we going to sell the oil to? Who's going to buy the oil? I'm still asking this question because we've got to factor in if there is so much oil in those exploration fields there south of Namibia's southern coast. Who's going to buy the oil? Who? Doesn't matter how big these oil finds are, who's going to buy the oil? Saudi Arabia is already trying to diversify their economy because they can see that the writing is on the wall for the fossil fuel industry. Who? I'll mention this to you now. Just last week, Biden and Ramaphosa had a short discussion themselves. South Africa is being urged through Eskom to start investing in renewable energy. Eskom has got a large business ecosystem, an economic ecosystem to uphold as a power utility. Remember I told you that Namibia, with some other Southern African countries, we form part of a power pool. We buy from Eskom. We buy from Eskom. Eskom, for reasons unknown to me and to you, decided not to maintain their power grid. No, not the grid, more their power stations, their power generation units, which are the power stations. And also that Eskom is predominantly running on coal-powered power plants. Coal power plants. That means they have to burn a fossil fuel emitting emissions into the atmosphere. Thus, South Africa is actively contributing towards the global climate change, global climate warming. You mention it. And South Africa is now being urged to start investing through Eskom into renewable energy. I wonder how long it will take Eskom to tell NamPower start investing in renewable energy. I wonder how long. But those are just, that's just one slight focus on things to come, things that are going to happen. Reservations that a lot of people have about fossil fuels. It's not me, guys. I go read it. Through me, who's the proxy, I convey it to you. These are sentiments out there from people who are weighing up the options of what's going to happen. And I'll tell you what. Citizens in the EU and in the US will have more say, more sway over their governments, who are the policymakers, who are also the biggest clients of resource-rich countries like Namibia. And they will tell their governments, don't buy oil. Oil doesn't work for us. Now, who do you think Namibia is going to be able to sell oil to in the next 10 years? Or over the next 10 years? Or past the next 10 years? who are we going to sell oil to? It's probably also one of the reasons why we don't have such a big stake in these oil finds, because we don't know what the market situation will be 10 years from now in the energy solutions. And actually, this is where I think it's actually a very good play by our government, i.e. through our president, that we are all on the green hydrogen wagon or train or gravy train or train in any sense. Now, well, actually, if you say gravy train, it's something else. It's something totally different. But it's the same message. But I still have reservations about that. I still have. However, if we have to look at the global economy, because Namibia factors into the global economy, guys, you have to understand what's going to happen to your grazing land if you're a meat producer, if you're a farmer, or if you even just have a small mahangu patch. What's going to happen to it if you're going to have erratic rainy seasons in the next 10 years to come? And don't worry, you can argue as much as you want that Namibia does not have a big carbon footprint. For sure, we don't have it. It's negligible. 2.5 million people as opposed to 80 million people in Germany, as opposed to 60 million people in England. And England is as big as Erongo region, I think. Or is it Ochezonjupa? Or even the 20 million from Australia, or even the 140 million from Japan, or even the 350 million from the USA, Namibia has a negligible carbon footprint. We have a negligible input on the global climate discussion, on the global warming fears, on the global concerns with regarding global climate change. But to say we have a negligible input does not negate that we are not impacted by what someone in Beijing, let's for example say the capital of China, Beijing, has approximately what? 1 million cars. I'm using a conservative number, please guys. It's a truly conservative number, because a country of 1 billion people, there's no way that the capital of the country and this country has 1 billion inhabitants and citizens, there's no way that the capital can only have 1 million cars. There's no way that they can have only 1 million cars. So a safe estimate would at least be 1 million. Just for our example here on air. There's no way that you can say us as Namibia, because we've got a negligible input or negligible contribution towards the global carbon footprints that every country is responsible for, that we are not impacted in one other way. We are impacted. We are. Here's the thing. Weather does not choose where it's going to impact positively or negatively. Weather does not choose that. Weather does not choose that. There's no such thing in weather. There is no such thing. The unfortunate thing is, even the climate deniers, and yes, I'm going to mention these guys, most of them actually come from the fossil fuel industry, predominantly from the oil companies in the world. A lot of them play it off as if it's not their fault, as if it's not actually what they've done, but it is. They were the ones extracting it. They are the ones extracting it. They are the ones selling it. Them and the car companies. But if, for example, for my example where I left off, if 1 million cars, 1 million Chinese motorists in Beijing, in the capital of China, decides to drive between 7 a.m. and 8 a.m. on the roads there in Beijing, they generate so much smog. Smog is the byproduct of the carbon monoxide that cars give off through the exhaust systems. They generate so much smog, right? It looks like a fog in that city. It looks like a fog. Now, where do you think that fog has to go to? Where do you think it has to go to? It goes into the atmosphere, obviously. when it goes into the atmosphere and there's just too much carbon dioxide or monoxide being supplied into the atmosphere, it causes reverberations. Now remember, air moves everywhere. Air transports the smog everywhere. Not that you see physical smog. Obviously, it gets broken down and it gets mixed into with the air currents of our atmospheres or the various atmospheres that we have. But here's the scenario. It can cause what we have now start knowing as the El Nino and the La Nino systems occurring on opposite ends of the southern hemisphere. When a La Nino happens, or when an El Nino happens, the opposite happens on the other end of the world, in the southern hemisphere. So if Namibia is going to experience a La Nino, or La Nina, sorry, a La Nina system, an El Nino system is going to be somewhere else in the southern hemisphere. Somewhere else. Because the northern hemisphere will be in they're going to be experiencing their winter months when we are experiencing our summer months. Our rainy season, they're going to have their other wet season, which is their winter season. So it brings in perspective who influences the global climate in a negative manner. How and who? Now, the Brookings Institute, which is a research institute from the United States, and this is just before we reach the next ad break at the top of the hour. I've got like 4 minutes before seven. The Brookings Institute notes that substantial biophysical damages will occur in the absence of strong climate policy actions. Now, they noted that the world's climate has already changed measurably in response to accumulating greenhouse gas emissions. These changes, as well as projected future disruptions, have prompted intense research into the nature of the problem and the potential policy solutions. Now, this, as according to the Brookings Institute, and this is a specific research paper that I also want to bring in for this discussion. It's theirs, actually. So they note that this paper aims to summarize much of what is known about both adopting an economic lens focused on how ambitious climate objectives can be achieved at the lowest possible cost. Now, the unfortunate scenario is, guys, there's many ways that we can unbundle our discussion here on the business and economic zone, because the overall climate discussion is so vast. I say vast because you start with climate, you can end up in agriculture. You start with climate, you can end up in tourism. You start with climate, you can end up in energy supply and the various forms of energy supply. And that in itself is pretty expansive. You start with climate, you can head into what can we put there? Water. We start with climate, you can head into the movement of animals, you know, nature conservation. You start with climate, you can head into manufacturing. You start with climate, you can head into mining. You start with climate, you can head into fishing, which is another extractive industry. And remember, in Namibia sense, fishing is always lumped together with agriculture, but fishing is measured on its own. I know. It's a bit odd, but it is also understandable, because fishing in itself has got its own unique inputs, investments, as well as also its own processes in how it deals with that scenario. But here's the key thing about fishing. Fishing itself is just as, I almost said feeble, but the word that I actually want to use is that it's not a very resilient industry as well. Because let's say, for example, the Benguela cold current starts warming up because of the global climate discussion. That means all that fishing resources that we've got alongside our coast starts moving away, because they are deep. They are used to cold currents. They can only breed in cold currents, and they only thrive in cold currents. If the current starts becoming warmer, the fish move. This has also been witnessed all around the world. When ocean currents start becoming warmer, the aquatic marine life start moving away. Remember that. When the currents become warmer, they move away. So that would mean we lose a vital resource in our global, in not our global.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
The International University of Management, IUM, with the Umbo no number no wish we faguja, Omanjirongo or Tuataya Academic Year 2023, Okapatruka, and the Rapa if you record a paparoe, more education, Ukarolong if you got it, Ufe or health and social science, or show my fano information and communication technology, or strategic management and leadership, Natai Monica, no tourism, or show hospitality and event management, business administration, Ikuterera. Environmental studies and postgraduate studies at Shota de Monica. We're there, Oto Monica website, www.ium.edu.na. You tell me when you're at IUM, the Kulipopepi, Movenduka, Monkore Nguru, Mongwe Diva, no Mompae, Ota de Monica. We're there to hang a Congo J. Avenduka. 061 ongodi ne natonatu oma vedi hamano inda komesho kufetokoro liri munjira toiko mona kuiwa inerao pamwe na IUM.
Now coming back from that our extended break right there, the key thing where I just ended off in terms of just before the break was the resilience in terms of looking after natural resource, especially when it comes to something that we in Namibia, we're still trying to benefit as much from. However, there is a little bit of a question mark about that as well, because there is always the threat of overfishing in the fishing industry. There's always the threat of that. The aspect thereof also is that we sometimes do not understand what's the total size of the resource in terms of how to better manage it. On top of that, also, you've got some other insights with regards to, you know, various other industries that also want to manufacture some more from our marine, let's say from our marine resource, not the fishing. And the key thing from this is, how does this all add up in the global climate discussion? How does it? I mentioned this key take, this specific key zone on our fishing industries because for one or other reason, we as Namibians, we are not concerned. We were concerned with regards to the drought because obviously it was more obvious in terms of the cattle farmers, the cattle producers. Some of the producers you could see that did not have resilient mechanisms at hand, or I'll make use of this word resilient a lot, guys. Please bear with me. But you could see that some cattle producers or some meat producers, they did not have resilient enough infrastructure mechanisms as well as also other aspects available in order for them to stem or to be able to resist the impacts that the drought had. And it was a five-year drought. It was a five-year drought from 2013, 2012 actually, up to 2018, in flowing into 2019. That depends now if you were not predominantly in the Kunene, because the Kunene was unfortunately the most hardest hit region. And this is key to take, to note, and to place a magnifying glass on, because that was a very, very, very vulnerable sector in our overall agricultural sector. It was a very vulnerable sector. A lot of Namibians were shouting at the top of their lungs, let's start tapping into the aquifers. Yeah, just how long does it take to replenish an aquifer? How long? How long does it take to replenish an aquifer? Because it took millions of years for that aquifer to occur. So how long do you think it will take to replenish that aquifer? Exactly. And the other notion is, since we already have an example of a environmental catastrophe that struck Namibia, what do you think will happen when the cold Benguela current, which is home to all of the fish species that we harvest annually for the fishing industry locally and internationally, what do you think will happen? And those fish, they need cold water currents. They are designed for cold water currents. They are not warm water fish. They don't thrive in warm seawater. So they will move somewhere else, and then we lose a precious resource. Just like that. Just like that. On previous sessions of the Business Economic Zone, I bragged about how Namibia has got, I think, almost five or six kinds of meat, you know, animal, you know, meat products or protein products. Fish, pork, mutton, goat, beef, game. Yeah, it's six. Six. And if you want to include donkey, for sure. That makes it seven. But the donkey is like half, you know. So look at the precariousness of not just the onshore, the on-land agricultural process, but also look at the fishing industry itself. In other parts of the world, they're already experiencing increased water levels. You know, the shoreline is being gobbled up by increasing sea levels. Other parts, islands have completely disappeared because of rising sea levels. If you go to the South Pacific islands of Tonga, Samoa, Fiji, in that region around New Zealand, close to New Zealand, Australia, islands have lost some islands have been totally been submerged by rising sea levels. They're actually going to be the countries now at the upcoming COP27 that are going to be shouting the loudest at especially the G7, the G20 countries, the EU guys, because they're the guys that even us as the African countries have been asking for the past 10, 20 years, release the funding in order for us to start with the climate action policies or with the policies that you guys want us to implement. Release the funding. Bring the money to the table. Now, the concern there is, obviously, the money has now been redirected somewhere else because there is, for some reason, a Ukraine conflict in between. And this is the fears that us African countries, as well as also some of the other Global South countries, have with regards to the attention span, especially that the EU, the G7, the G20 countries are paying. Well, it was now no longer including China and Russia. Let's also add that in. The G7, the G20 is no longer including China and Russia, which will also present a very fractured, a very concerning picture, especially to us as Namibians, when the United Nations General Assembly has to happen later this month, as well as also when COP27 has to happen in Egypt in next month. Put them down in your calendars, guys, because I am going to be talking about them. We're actually going to be taking a look at what our president will be saying, and also keeping a close eye on what all the other countries in the Global South might be and wanted to add. It's a nice feature. You can just go into the United Nations website, pretty easy, and you can just go have a look there. But we will still contain those discussions here on the BEZ later this month. So I'm signaling already to you, that's what we're going to be focusing on. The other concern stems from how long? Time. Expected time of action. You know, not the conventional ETA, expected time of arrival, but the other ETA, expected time of action. When are things going to happen? And really, when are things going to happen? I mean, will Namibia go and say something totally different? Will we or will we not? Will we see a global policy that will include everyone and that there's no form of discrimination against China and Russia? Yes, guys, we have to factor them in because China has 1 point something billion people and Russia sits with its own 500 million people. Was it 400 million people? It's two considerable populations, man. It's two considerable ones. In between, you've got India as well, with its own 1 billion plus population size. And India also is signaled towards greater climate action being needed. So if you're going to worry about what's the deal, why we should be concerned is that, hey, your rainy season might start changing. Or since Namibia is such a dry country, we might even see smaller and smaller rainy seasons occurring. And then you will still want to go tap into aquifers. Now, the major concern, and this is just what I want to add in that comes from the Brookings Institute's own research paper. Now, this small research paper is actually quite smaller than what, because they just summarize it. It's known as the 10 Facts About the Economics of a Climate Change and the Climate Policy. Now, they note here themselves that considerable uncertainties surround both the extent of climate future climate change and the extent of the biophysical impacts on of such change. The thing is, in that one sentence, what they're actually telling you is no one can say what are the direct impacts. You witness the impacts as it is unfolding in front of you. You witness it as it's unfolding in front of you. For some reason, and I'll throw this in just for a little bit of some comic relief into this very, very serious discussion point, is that last year, the Germans didn't think that it was possible that they could have floods during their summer season. They had floods. This year, they experienced their warmest summer. Yes, the country of Germany. And also the surrounding European countries around them. They had massive rains last year. Now they had their warmest summer, impacting their entire agricultural systems and ecosystems, thus also impacting their entire economic, economic prosperity from their agricultural sectors for their own European Union bloc. So putting sort of like an estimate or forecasting thing saying, yeah, so next year this could be the scenario. No one knows. Because that's the thing with meteorology. It's not an exact science, because if it was an exact science, any scientist would be able to reproduce the same results. So yes, everyone around the world is just taking a look 1 week, one day at a time. See what the situation looks like. So you can only estimate as far as end of this week. You can only work with estimations even. And that's one of the things, if you ever had to listen to some of the weather reports that we always, would host here on Eagle FM, especially coming from the Namibia Met Office, is that the Met Office always says the forecast looks like. It's not 100% it will end there, but it looks like it can change. There's a possibility of change. So, the concern is real. The concern is very real. If you're going to ask me, what will we be able to do? Well, Namibia has a very novel idea. My concern with that novel idea is just, are we helping other people reach their climate goals? And that takes another 5 years. So within the next 10 years, how does it add up? right?
Paratus Mobile LTE. Everything you want, whenever you want it. Start uploading, downloading, liking, and sharing all your experiences with the world. Starting from 345 Namibian dollars per month, excluding VAT for postpaid. Get online with high-speed internet the way you want it. Visit paratus.africa/NA for more information. Always prepared.
Now we come back from that quick break, and there are already changes, damages, impacts taking place around the world. I mentioned to you submerged islands. I mentioned to you rising sea levels occurring already. I've mentioned to you some parts that have never seen rain for the past 3 years, for example, like Somalia. Well, I actually didn't mention Somalia as yet, but it's there. Madagascar had one of its longest droughts last year. For the whole year of 2021, they didn't have rain up until December. Then they started seeing their first rainfall again. The uncertainties, however, are still there. Because the climate scientists have all reached a strong consensus that in the absence of measures to reduce greenhouse gas emissions significantly, the changes in climates, or in the climate, because there's only one climate, will be substantial. Especially with long-lasting effects and impacts on many of the planet's physical and biological systems. If you're going to wonder, what do they mean by that? Well, if you had to look at the everyday operations of life around you, especially like with the insect life, small animals, especially with insects and birds, how they help to pollinate trees and plants during, you know, the spring and summer months. It's so that you see, you know, the blossoms coming out every year, same time, same period. What happens if insect species die out because they were not resilient enough to changing weather patterns or changing temperatures in a specific zone that they live in? Or if a specific bird that was crucial to a specific plant species surviving or thriving in a specific area does not fly there anymore because the temperatures became not so conducive for that plant, that bird to be there, what do we do then? So you see, it has knock-on effects, significant knock-on effects, significant ones. The other thing is also that there are significant risks that are associated with low probability, but potentially catastrophic outcomes. And that also a focus on median outcomes alone warrants efforts to reduce emissions of greenhouse gases. Economists around the world have argued that the uncertainties and the associated risks justify more aggressive policy action is needed than otherwise would have been warranted. This was according to Weizmann, 2009-2012. So, in a vacuum or in the absence of no policy, it could be catastrophic. But having an aggressive agenda at trying to stem or trying to invest in climate resilient systems, climate resilient policies in our country would be the way to go. It would be the way to go. Unfortunately, there has to be a balance. There has to be a balance. You see, even though I mentioned that Namibia's carbon emissions or greenhouse gas emissions are negligible, we are measured. It's negligible. It's negligible. It's so small, it's negligible. The unfortunate thing is we are bordering a country that has a massive manufacturing complex, as well as also its contribution, its greenhouse gas contributions, are probably one of the biggest on the continent, South Africa. So South Africa can potentially influence our climate patterns. They can potentially influence our rainy seasons. There's nothing you'd be able to do about it. There's nothing. There is nothing we would be able to do about it. And even though Ramaphosa and Biden
were discussing about how Eskom has to start looking at renewable energy as a source or in its overall transition phase or from non-renewable to renewable energy sources. The question still needs to be asked in terms of how long, time frame, what are the impacts economically, and the other further knock-on impacts to stem from. Because Eskom, guys, is a massive organism in South Africa's economic ecosystem. Eskom buys coal. Eskom is also facilitating in South Africa's retail fuel market. Eskom is a key component for us as Namibia in terms of power supply, Botswana, I think Mozambique. Safe to say, safe to bet, Eswatini and Lesotho. Probably also safe to bet Zimbabwe, even though Zimbabwe is it's small. I mean, if they set up their own power plant in Zimbabwe, they can actually be self-sufficient. But just look at the dependency in terms of the power pool that invests in the South African power generation market for us to extract. But things cannot go on, cannot be the same forever. Cannot be the same forever. I mean, right now in Puerto Rico, they have experienced a tropical storm. Just for some background context, certain parts of the world, it's the same thing, you know, like the superstorm Ida that Mozambique and Zimbabwe experienced just a couple of years back. They are actually hurricanes. They're actually hurricanes or they're actually cyclones. It's the same thing also with the monsoons that Southeast Asia experiences. But in the different positions the geographic positions on the world, they have each one have their own meaning. Or not meaning, but their own classification or categorization. Puerto Rico's whole power was knocked out. It's an island country. Puerto Rico's whole electricity system, their power grid, was knocked out just over this past weekend. I told you last month, Pakistan is completely flooded. Pakistan is now facing a cholera problem. Pakistan had glaciers, which are these things, these big, massive bodies of ice that you see in the North Pole and the South Pole, the Antarctic and the Arctic, that you also find in countries like Switzerland and southern Germany, eastern France, and northern Italy, in the Alps and the Pyrenees regions. Glaciers. A glacier in Pakistan had been melting continuously. So there was excess water in the river systems of Pakistan. And it was further exacerbated by non-stop rain for a complete month. The whole of August was raining. Now I know, yes, I know. You would be happy as a Namibian if you had rain for a whole month. But it's bad. We've seen what happened. Neckartal got filled up in a record space. It was estimated Neckartal was supposed to fill up over a course of 5 years with the rainy seasons filling it up. Neckartal got filled up in a whole 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Now, if you don't want more evidence of impending climate impacts and changes, what else are you asking for? Now, the scientific consensus, according to Brookings, is also expressed through summary documents that were offered every several years by the United Nations-sponsored Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, known as the IPCC. These documents indicate the projected outcomes under alternative representative concentration pathways for the greenhouse gases. And each of these RCPs, these representative concentration pathways, represents different GHG, which is the greenhouse gases, trajectories over the next century, with higher numbers corresponding to more emissions. So as we're going to head forward, because I read a very nice thing in terms of, I saw a very nice article. I think it was one of the vice presidential hopefuls in the ruling party, SWAPO, Madam Nandi Ndaitwa, that mentioned that Vision 2030 is around the corner from now. The unfortunate thing is that Vision 2030 is being put under, is under threat actually by global climate. It is. It is, guys. Vision 2030 will be under threat by the global climate discussion. The unfortunate thing is, we are talking about Vision 2030 as if the situation won't change between 2022 and 2030, or up to 2030. The situation can even change end of this year, or can even change in our coming rainy season, which would start from either end of this month or in October. Now, say now let's work with this hypothetical situation. I'm actually, you know, tapping here on the tapping on the studio desk. Let's say, for example, Namibia walks into a threat of a looming drought for the next 3 years. What are you going to do? Are we still going to be concentrating on Vision 2030? Are we? Will we be able to achieve Vision 2030? Because if you will then have farmers who just got out of a drought scenario at the end of 2018, heading into 2019, trying to rebuild, especially the livestock farmers, trying to rebuild what they lost. And I'll let you know now, guys, there's a lot of farmers out there that I'm not impressed with, especially the livestock guys. There's a lot of you that I'm not impressed with. Some I have been impressed with. Others, you just stand there wincing the whole time. You know, you pull that face when you feel a pain that you're not actually experiencing, but you see that the other person is experiencing. You show that grimace, that wince. You know, your eyes are squinted and you make that ouch expression on your face. You pull that expression on your face. A lot of us have seen that meme, actually, or some of those memes. That's sometimes how you look at some livestock producers in this country. And in some cases, then they will complain once again to Meatco or to the press about Meatco's prices that Meatco is offering them. But just in the last drought session, when Meatco approached a lot of these livestock farmers, and they told them, sell to us in order for you to mitigate your losses. Some of them didn't want to. Some of them didn't want to. If you're trying to understand the meat industry currently, start from 2018. Start from 2013 to 2018. Start from there. And you'll sometimes even see up until now, 2022, how some livestock farmers have not changed, have not adapted, nor even tried to amend the way in which they go about their business. The thing is, if you want resilience, you yourself on the ground, you have to be aware of what's going on. You have to be aware. The concern just last year, beginning of this year, the red locust migration, still ask yourself this question, guys. Ask yourself this question.
So, jy het dit gedoen. Jy het jou laat besny.
Yep,
dit was baie dapper. Was dit nie vrek seer nie?
Dit was net so effens seer, maar dit is die moeite werd om myself teen seksueel oordraagbare infeksies te beskerm. En dit is soveel makliker om skoon te hou.
Wel, as jy dit so stel, dan moet ek dit dalk ook laat doen.
Bra, dit is die regte ding om te doen. Man Up, kry 'n besnyding. Om 'n gratis besnyding te bespreek of om meer uit te vind, stuur 'n WhatsApp boodskap na 081-309-2729 of besoek ons Facebookblad by VMMC Namibia.
Now, just ending on this last note, because that ad actually signals the end of today's program. But as I mentioned, guys, We will be exploring this. This whole week, we're talking about climate, the economy, or the global economy, and signaling Namibia's economy, and also the whole discussion around it, climate change as well, or the environment, sorry, the environment as well. But I want to leave you with this last thought. And this is actually a little, just a little piece of interesting information that you can try and read up on your own. That red locust that migrated to Namibia at the end of 2020. And I've mentioned the red locust before, guys, because the red locust insects are actually one of the telltale signs where you can see climate change in action in front of your eyes. That red locust is not indigenous to Namibia. It's not an insect indigenous to Namibia. It traveled all the way from Kenya there in, you know, the Horn of Africa region, alongside the eastern coast of Africa, crossed over SADC region, and ended up in Namibia. First it stopped, touched down in northeast Namibia, that's now the Zambezi region, and the two Kavangos. And then they traveled down along the eastern, our eastern border with Botswana. You can now find them here in the south, close to the Stampede region. Because one of the parliamentarians, MP, Honorable Jan van Wyk, who is from the Rehoboth constituency, had asked that specific question to, I think it's to Minister Schledwijn, last year in the parliament process. Because he asked a question about two agricultural pestilences. One was the red locust, where they were hearing reports of the red locust moving down Namibia's eastern border in the Kalahari Desert. They are now in Stampede. They're still there. They're still there. They won't go anywhere. And secondly, there was another animal disease that he reported on in the National Assembly. This is key to take note of, guys, because these are the little telltale signs of the environment in action. If you start seeing insects, some animals migrating or moving into specific zones, no, this is not Noah's Ark or something biblical. No, please, please, let's not get there. Let's not get ridiculous. It's just that you've got to make an observation of a scenario in front of you that actually speaks to something bigger. Now, on that note, just go read up a little bit about the African red locust. It's actually not indigenous to Southern Africa, or to Namibia's region at least. But that brings us to the end of tonight's edition of the Business and Economic Zone. Let's see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow on the brand conversation, and then later on, same time, same place tomorrow evening here on the BEZ. Stay tuned for the rest of your programming here on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM, and enjoy yourself in the company of yours truly, Eagle FM.